Yeah.
There we go. That might be the intro. That might
That's a good intro.
Whistling of the beginning of My Heart Will Go On, including the crack on the high note.
Oh, beautiful.
Honestly, I don't think the mic picked it all up. It was like a little bit of it.
See what you hear when you look at the file.
Yeah,
you'll just include the part where we're talking about it. The last couple notes, and then just the top.
And then, wow, that was really good. Okay, nice. Hello and welcome to Saving People, Queering Things, the supernatural podcast where we support Celine Dion, even if the angels seemingly don't. Today we are pulling up to Season 6, Episode 17, My Heart Will Go On. I'm your host Noah, pronouns he, him.
I'm August, pronouns they, them.
And my name is Ian, pronouns he, him. Despite only being on one episode, I am referred to as a fan favorite.
Yes!
Your episode was really good.
It was fantastic.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been almost exactly four seasons.
Exactly four seasons, actually, yeah.
Yeah,
if you haven't listened to it, Hollywood Babylon, it was
Hollywood
really...
Babylon!
Also, fun fact, the first episode that Noah edited for this podcast...
Before I came on as an official full co-host of the show.
Yeah.
But it was great. It was a good time. So I've heard Ian's voice more than I've seen his face. So do with that what you will.
It'll be one-to-one by the end of this.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Ian is one of my friends that is local. So it's fun. I get to record in person. I don't get to do that very often.
Woo-hoo. I'm waiting for the day that all of the main co-hosts get to get together and record in person, all of us.
We'll have to make that one a video episode.
Chaotic as hell, I swear.
I think that would be the one. I think that would be a time to be like, we're going to put out a video episode.
Yeah.
No, video option.
A completely unedited, we just got to do it in one take. Here we go. Anyway, the question I have for my co-host today is, would you be okay with sacrificing more or less 50,000 people who were never really born in order to keep two of your family members alive?
If we found out we were in this situation.
Yes, exactly.
Are you asking me or asking August?
Both.
Both of us. Oh, geez.
It's a really tough episode, question, because like no answer makes you seem like a good person.
Nope. You either hate your family or you don't care about 50,000 potential people. So yeah. It's like a lose-lose scenario.
Lean towards the like potential, like if you're exactly in the context of this episode, I think you sacrificed 50,000 people, mostly because you know it's all going to shit anyway.
Yeah.
If it's not the threat of like fate intervening, it's a harder question.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the trolley problem, except exactly the trolley problem, except the 50,000 people, instead of getting hit by a trolley, just cease to exist.
Yeah, which is violent.
Yeah, it is
less violent.
And there is also the weird like butterfly effecty things that they don't have a lot of. I think that they directly reference in this episode.
Yeah,
but also just the individuals in people's lives who have or have not died. We only really got two absolutely confirmed people who didn't die, but there was also no reference to any, you know, here's a character who's still alive in the main canon, but no references to that, which is tricky when you have an alternate timeline for one episode and like half an episode of that. It is an interesting idea that they flesh out in a couple of really good visual gags and don't have a lot else to do with.
Yeah, the shortness of this alternate universe limits what they're actually able to do. But like that's supernatural for you. Would they like to be like, let's give you an alternate universe, but for like one episode? This is like the fifth time they've done that already, this show.
Yeah, because we had It's a Wonderful Life. We had the changing channels. Does that count? Okay.
Yep.
And then
we also had even Mystery Spot kind of plays with that. Yeah.
Okay, this is a question because I want to be sensitive to Noah's not watching the show. Have they gone to Vancouver yet?
Yes, we just did that episode.
I never remember where that is.
Yeah, French mistake was 2 weeks ago. Okay. So It's fresh in our mind.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that may be the most famous AU. It's funny because I think I forget about this episode's AU because it's overshadowed by French Mistake being right before. It's and so because close. Only one episode. And it textually ends up being like kind of in a dream sequence.
Yeah, which is we'll talk about that. That's a choice. But if we had to boil it down, two family members that you care a lot about,
you're gonna make 50,000?
Yes or no?
I'll go 50,000. I'll make them not. I'm not unaliving them. I am preventing them from ever being alive.
I think I like lean that way as well. I think
like you would pick the family members to survive.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I don't feel good about it.
No.
Where I would choose. What about you, Noah?
I honestly think I would pick the family members to survive too. So, can't blame me for that. So 50,000 people I don't know. Yeah.
If you're a family listening to this,
shout out. We love you. 50,000 people's lives worth. So, you know, it works. Now that you've met your hosts for today, it is time to catch you up. If you haven't watched Supernatural recently, here's what you've missed on the road so far. First up, August is going to recap the show up to this point. Are you ready?
All right. Yeah. I've done a show recap in a while, so no pressure. I'm ready. I'm not prepared. I'm not preparing.
You got this. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so there are two brothers. They hunt monsters, and recently they stopped an apocalypse along with their very good buddy slash gay lover, Castiel. Now they are post-apocalypse, but there is a angelic civil war. Cass is flitting in and out doing something. They got thrown into Canada? Alternate universe. And they're trying to figure out how to stop all these alpha monsters that keep showing up. And maybe Eve also? Mother of all?
Ooh, damn. You nailed it.
Felt good about that one.
10 out of 10. Could not complain even a little bit.
I was like, I'm just going to slide past seasons 1 through 5 really quickly because my problem with these recaps is sometimes I get stuck explaining the context of Sam and Dean and then I have used 25 seconds.
Yeah.
But if somebody's listening to season 6 of our show and they don't know who Sam and Dean are at this point, that's on them.
Very true. Very true.
Next up, we've got Ian here to recap this episode. Are you ready, Ian?
1 second to pull up some notes.
Yeah.
There we are.
Perfect. Okay. We love it.
All right.
30 seconds on the clock.
All right.
Okay.
3, 2, 1, go.
Celine Marie Claudette Dion, born March 30th, 1968, is a Canadian singer referred to as the Queen of Power Ballads. She is noted for her powerful and technically skilled vocals. Her music is incorporated genres such as pop, rock, R&B, gospel, and classical music. Her recordings have been mainly made in English and French, although she has also sung in Spanish, Italian, German, Latin, Japanese, and Chinese. Born into a large family in Charlemagne, Quebec, Dion discovered her future manager and husband, René Angel, and emerged as a teen star in her home country.
Ooh, okay. Fantastic information.
I learned something.
Yeah.
I did not know she had that many languages.
She recorded in so many languages. Impressive. My God.
And in this episode, she's just a lounge singer.
They just dunk on her super hard.
So hard. Yep. Well,
And she's also Canadian too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I knew that.
Did you not know that? She's considered one of our notable.
She is so notable. There's a comedy band that has a song about how they're in love with her.
Okay. Send me that link once we're over because.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, it is the Arrogant Worms and the song is just called Celine Dion.
And if you haven't heard Arrogant Worms, you're probably not Canadian. But the Arrogant Worms just do weird songs as evidenced by the fact that they have a song about Celine Dion.
Three of them because there's always three between them, the Wolves of Glendale and Axis of Awesome. There always seem to be three and none of them play the actual drums. Very silly comedy music and they're very good and very Canadian.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're like just Canadian references pretending.
So they're like the Canadian Lonely Island.
Less production value.
Okay, yeah. Fair. So yes, yeah. The Canadian Lonely Island.
Yeah. A lot of very acoustic driven songs. We were speaking about hockey before this and one of the Arrogant Worms does song commissions and one of the ones he's released to the public is called Finland Greatest Hockey Power that he
so funny
for a guy in Finland because in the Olympics in the men's hockey Olympics Finland is the highest rated average team but has very few gold medals because they always get silver or bronze every year. It's silver or bronze for them every year, and so they have the greatest average statistic for Rocky, but
it's a very funny song. It's a very funny song.
They have to win.
It's the Arrogant Worms are like they're very lyrically focused. Yeah, like they're just very lyrically silly and full of a lot of like Canadian references and like ultra niche references. They're extremely funny. If you enjoy The Lonely Island, you will probably enjoy The Arrogant Worms.
Okay,
maybe we'll put some favorites in the description of the podcast this week.
No. Okay, nice, beautiful. Speaking of music recommendations, now it is time for us to pick some music to accompany us on our journey. Here's what we've had for our episode mixtape this week. August, did you want to go first?
Yeah, so the song I have is Life's What You Make It by Tok Tok. And I chose this song because it's all about, you know, life's what you make it. Choose your own destiny. Choose your own adventure, which is sort of the point of this episode, even if it goes south. And this is just a classic song. Like the vibes and the boppiness of it are just kind of work with this episode.
Hell yeah.
And I enjoyed doing a re-listen of it. Hadn't heard it in a while.
Yeah.
So yeah, Life's What You Make It by Tok Tok.
Beautiful. Ian, what about you?
I'm going to go for the obvious answer and go with My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion.
Had to Beautiful. Be there.
I'm so proud of you. I didn't have the courage to do it on mine.
Any version of it, whether it's the recorder version, whether it's
especially the recorder version
is something very special. But it's also a popular enough song that I'm pretty sure you could find a cover of it in any genre you seek.
Yeah
Like in 30 seconds I could probably find a chiptune version of it with an accompanying like fake video game of the Titanic.
What if you just sing it for us in the chiptunes?
No, I can't digitize my own voice on command, unfortunately.
I'm not going to do it.
Not about it. Like I can try.
My pick this week was Hole in the Bottom of My Brain by AJR, because that song is all about chasing a feeling that you can never really achieve no matter how much you push stuff into the cracks, because Bobby and Dean and Sam would never truly feel okay about sacrificing that many people for this world if they felt responsible the whole time, you know? Like if they sacrificed 50,000 people for just Ellen and Joe, they would hate themselves for the rest of time and sort of their hole in the bottom of their brain.
I mean, sort of the reason they don't save Ellen and Joe in the first place in the real timeline is because their only shot at like stopping the apocalypse and many billions of people dying is to like not save Ellen and Joe, like not prioritize their lives. So like kind of full circle-y in a terrible way.
A terrible, heart-wrenching, destructive way. Yes, absolute. Damn. Some fantastic mixtape picks this week.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But now that we've got our mixtape playing, it's time for this week's hunt. Today, we are pulling up to Season 6, Episode 17, My Heart Will Go On, through the theme of confusion, which was quite the fitting theme this week, because these brothers sat down in a Mustang, and I said...
How confused were you, Noah, watching this first, like, 10 minutes of the episode?
Did I miss something, Must? I swear I was paying attention. What the fuck is this?
How much did it throw you? When did you figure out?
As soon as Ellen walked on screen, I said, fuck. Okay. Okay. This is just going to be a really painful alternate universe, alternate timeline story. And I hate it. I hate it. I saw the stripes and I was like, what? And then I saw the Mustang logo and I was like, what? It was bad. How petty does Balthazar have to be to go and unmake the entire Impala line? Like, what?
I mean, this is Balthazar we're talking about. So far, very petty seems to be his primary personality trait.
That's fair.
It's petty, but it's also, I always like weird alternate history.
Oh, yeah.
This comes in later in the episode and they never mention it, but the travel agent character having a giant go visit Detroit voted America's number one city.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it's like her office is sort of the spot where, I'm guessing partially because of budgetary restrictions and different things, is the spot they decide to drop all of the like, go visit Cuba. It's going to be super fun. Visit the Trump Tower that's there.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
They're like all of the hiding all of the Easter eggs about like, these are all of the like ripple effect changes globally because we can't show you them.
Okay.
other than the brothers driving a different car.
Yeah. I mean, it being Detroit is fascinating when we think about like Swan Song and all of that happening in Detroit. Like, it's
Devil in Detroit. Yeah.
Interesting choice. Yeah. It's a fun. These are like the episodes where I like wish they played out the AU a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And I get why it's a one episode thing, but.
But still, please give us some more. Give us Joe at least. Please. I know you showed us Ellen for a like, decent amount of the episode.
I'm guessing it was probably an availability issue.
That's fair. I get it. But put her in a picture, at least. That picture with Ellen and Bobby outside of the repair shop. Put Joe in that picture, please. That was a little frustrating. And I get it. This is the CW. They don't have the budget to bring back both Ellen and Joe. But damn. At least we got her on the phone. And that was okay.
Yeah. What are like general thoughts from both of you?
As far as just timeline or as far as just the episode?
Anything.
Episode perfect. I love Final Destination.
And yes!
This is television Final Destination, which means the first Final Destination and then minor Rube Goldberg machines. Because the first, if anyone for whatever reason hasn't seen Final Destination, all of them but the fourth one are incredible.
Is the fourth one the one with the bridge? Because I like the bridge.
That's the Final Destination. Yeah, that's the one that takes place in Vancouver or is filmed.
Okay, fair.
Which that's hilarious.
Is the disaster. The fourth one is the one with the race car track.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that one's kind of mid for sure.
Yeah. And basically for people who have for whatever reason not seen Final Destination, the basic premise is kind of sucks in the sense of a bunch of people who were supposed to die don't die because someone has a premonition about a big disaster that happens.
Right.
And then death comes for each of them by, as the franchise goes on, setting up increasingly more elaborate ways to kill them.
Yeah, accidental ways to do it, quote unquote.
Right. Ways that no one could ever think was premeditated, but is 100% premeditated. Yeah. But like by manipulating the universe a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And so, and this episode, again, by the sense of it being a TV budget and therefore smaller, is really, really similar to the first Final Destination in the sense of it's, you know, they trip on a thing and then a thing hits the mousetrap and then they get decapitated by a garage door.
Which is a very like the elaborateness of that scene of like all the little pieces that go into that scene.
Honestly, my first note was, okay, we're getting some Final Destination shit up in here. I get it.
I love that that's where you went immediately. Like
immediately. Oh, it was good. I mean, I feel like that has to be what they were channeling because the first Final Destination came out before this episode.
Yeah. Oh, they're absolutely channeling that energy.
I would be unsurprised to find out because I believe the last three Final Destination movies were all filmed in Vancouver to some extent.
Yeah.
And I know that at least the third one had come out at that point.
Okay.
I believe because it came out in like 2008.
Yeah. So then
this is 2011, I think.
There was a little bit of crossover when it comes to some amount of the support staff between this episode of the show and Final Destination.
That would make sense. A C-budget movie franchise and then a top-budget CW franchise would have a lot of crossover, I feel like. Yeah.
At kind of the height of it's like Supernatural was like had been renewed, like was in a good position, in the bankrupt CW. Their shoestring budget was like two shoestrings at this point. Maybe.
Okay, but sorry, to bring it back to the beginning of the episode, Bobby, when he's, you know, struggling about losing Rufus, which everybody's been there when they've lost somebody that they truly care about, a boyfriend, and...
We had a whole conversation last episode about this.
Oh, yeah.
They were partners, for sure.
Stands here.
We know it. Yep. And Sam and Dean are trying their best to figure out, hey, you say something. No, you say something. And I'm pretty confident it's been a running theme throughout the show so far that Dean always loses the rock, paper, scissors challenge, right?
You are correct. You have picked up on a correct theme.
Okay, but then this episode, he went and he does quite the smirk where he's like, I've been playing you for the past six seasons.
Oh, yeah.
And
Dean,
now I'm going to win.
Dean always throws scissors. And like, there's a comment. I'm not sure if it's already happened. There's a point, and I think it's already happened.
easy. It's definitely already happened because Sam always throws the scissors.
I think it might be in one of these like jokey episodes. It might have been in Tales or Ghostface or something like that.
That sounds right. But Dean still throws scissors and Sam throws paper and then like looks at Dean's answer and then looks back at his and is like, wait, I meant to throw rock. What the fuck? And Dean does such a smirk like, I'm the shit. Let's do it. You gotta go. That felt like a big moment to me. And that was just in the first like 25 seconds of the episode.
Further into this exchange, I do really enjoy the like, who are you guys, my wife?
Yes. Reference.
Sounds like it just sounds like a joke. And then it's, oh no, he's married in this timeline.
Yeah. They do a lot of like, once you know what's happening, go back and be like, oh, there were all these little clues in like the way Bobby is acting and all of that. But until that point, you don't know it until Ellen shows up and you go, oh, like.
Did not pick up on that.
That's fair. I mean, I don't think you're meant to not. You're meant to just sort of think this picks up right where the last episode left off, which it does, but like also doesn't.
Yeah. This is an episode that you watch twice if you can, ideally. The first time you watch it to just sort of enjoy it and see what's going on, and the second time you watch it to pick up all the references that they dropped in and all the weird little timeline bits and all that. For an episode where I'm going to be completely frank here, Sam and Dean don't really do a lot. Like
they're little chess pieces. Yeah. They move around.
Things happen around them, and like it just is fun. Set pieces and then it ends.
Okay, great. Yeah, they witness a lot, but they don't.
This episode's very much like driving the like big narrative along and kind of trying to like tell us something about like what's happening with like Balthazar and Cass and like the bigger plot. But Sam and Dean don't have a lot of agency to actually, and they spend a lot of the episode being pretty confused, like to go back to the theme about like what is actually happening. Like they kind of seem to have this sort of sense that things are wrong even before it's revealed that like, oh shit, like everything we know isn't accurate. We're missing a huge world event that has affected everything in our lives.
Everything. And they don't even realize it.
Yeah. That whole exchange they have about the Titanic is pretty funny.
It really is.
Heard about this boat. And it's
heard about this boat?
Just a random, it was a transatlantic sailing. And I mean, especially with how, between the historical event and then also the movie, which in and of itself is kind of a historical event.
Both of them, yeah. James Cameron, RIP, in this universe.
He probably still made Terminator. So.
Yeah, but then probably died shortly thereafter.
Yeah. I don't know.
Or had no inspiration and was like, well, I guess I'll just be a farmer.
I'll be a farmer.
This is the real loss, is we lose not only Celine Dion, we also lose James Cameron.
And we lose Avatar.
No, we still have Ashton Kutcher, but like, not. Oh boy.
I've actually never seen Avatar.
The blue people one or the not blue people one?
Well, okay. I haven't seen the blue people one. I have seen the TV show of The Last Airbender, but I would not watch the movie of The Last Airbender because I respect myself enough, having just spoken about loving the movie Cats. So it's fine. It's fine. I respect myself enough partially.
Like the Blue People Avatar, I've seen bits of it, but I've definitely seen more between parodies and people joking on their use of papyrus and the name of Unobtainium.
The SNL skits.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Avatar's like, you don't have to have seen it to like have felt its sort of cultural impact.
It's Pocahontas, but with blue people instead of Native Americans.
And only slightly less problematic as a result.
Slightly, yes. I worked both of them. If that works, when I worked at a movie theater, so I've seen bits and pieces here and there.
Did you ever have anyone come in blue for those movies?
Oh, honestly, I don't think I did.
I think you would remember if you had.
I think I would. I want to say coworkers said I had somebody come in and cosplay for The Way of Water, but I didn't see them.
Oh, that's. So that doesn't count. You weren't in the like
primetime showings.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a history of working in a movie theater.
Okay.
Nice movie theater. It was the movie theater near the university.
The cheap one.
The cheap one. like the
longest... You go underground and it's a little sketchy.
The ones I would go to.
Yeah. So the for reference, the longest standing movie, I worked there for 5 years. And the longest 10 years any movie had were Mamma Mia and the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Okay. Which is
telling of what our demographic was.
Yeah.
And so I never really saw anyone in costume outside of the Twilight movies.
Wow.
The entire
Twilight
song. Wow. Like all the whole time. Yeah.
Okay.
What a shot to take.
09 to 12.
All the movies over this 5 year period. It was just the Twilight movies that people dressed up for.
Yeah. And it was a lot of moms wearing t-shirts that looking back now make me mildly uncomfortable.
That it's like, I'm Team Edward. I'm Team Jacob.
You're 40, Karen.
Yeah. You're 40.
And these characters are 24 at most.
Edward is 100 and whatever. But
okay, Jacob, you're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And it's just real weird, no matter which way you slice it.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
Oh, I speaking of like references in this episode, I feel like I pulled up the wiki because I wanted to not miss any references. Let me make sure we talk about all of the references that happen. I mean, we get the iconic, like, we get One Way or Another plays in terms of music. Which was just like, you know, Supernatural like doesn't license a lot of like big stuff, but like when they do,
they go hard.
And like doing My Heart Will Go On in One Way or Another in this episode hit correctly.
Top notch.
And add comedy to what could otherwise be a kind of like they take a suspenseful scene and make it sick.
Okay, can we talk about that little montage there? Because that scene was so good. Every face that Jared and Jensen made during that scene was so good. The sort of cringy, like, oh my god, okay, I'm gonna walk through this situation of like real big intense moments that could end up in us dying, people throwing axes back and forth, and then they set the axes on fire and they both walk through it with such a face. That was so good. We got to see Dean's hellhound trauma come back up whenever the dogs were barking at him. We loved that.
Oh, good catch there on that.
It's been a while since we've seen that, but he was freaking out a lot more than Sam was.
They've been remarkably consistent about that when it comes to like any appearance of dogs.
Which I want to say is Jensen's responsibility, not the writers. You know, like he brought that out and the writers were like, oh yeah, that works. We did that. Totally. But
once
they walked through the fire, the faces that they each made with Jensen walking through it so fast with such a cringy look on his face, and then Jared taking a pause and then trying to go and then stopping and then going forward again. It was just top notch.
They know they're supposed to like get God.
Mm-hmm.
And that knowledge, it's like when you're like walking into something and the moment you're about to like do something that you know will hurt, but you have to do it.
When
and
you
that
walk moment into of a like, room where your ex is sitting there and you know you have to interact with them and to grab something that you left behind.
Or, you know, you have to like rip a Band-Aid off, or pull a particularly bad sliver out or piece of glass out of your hand. Like that moment of being like, maybe if I hesitate, like, just do it. Just get it done.
Just get it done. Just
walk in front of that flaming knife.
And then a flaming hatchet flies right in front of your face. And you're like, whoa, maybe I should take a step back. And then you're like, oh, no. Do it. It was a great montage. Love a good montage.
Oh, it is a good montage.
One thing we do need to point out in terms of like the meta of this episode and just general hilarity. And again, this is coming from one of the Supernatural wikis. Jensen actually did an ad for Titanic related merchandise.
Did you really?
Not making that up. I am going to pull up the image so Noah can see it, and I will link it.
Netflix. Oh my God.
It's his Days of Our Lives like era. So he's very blonde and 90s and staring at the camera, and he's holding this necklace, and it's a necklace inspired by the movie.
And he's got a jacket on, which is a denim jacket.
Very big denim jacket.
Yeah. It's we will link to a picture of this ad because it's extremely funny.
It's really nice. It looks good.
Yeah. So that's Jensen's personal connection with the movie Titanic.
And right below it, it says Nicholas makes huge splash with movie fans. And we've been known that Jensen makes big splashes with his fans wherever he goes around. So don't worry about it. that.
This episode was also aired on the 99th anniversary of the date the Titanic sank, which is fun.
That's pretty fun. That's pretty cool.
Like, the chances of them kind of timing that out and going, like, I'm curious as to whether or not they were like, had written this episode and then they got lucky, or if they were like, we need a major historical event to have like not happened, and then they went, wait, this episode would get released on this day, what if it was the Titanic? Like, you know, like, you could have chosen something else, but they chose the Titanic.
Okay, but like, what else could they have chosen in American history to make it that big of a, you know, reveal? 50,000 people in the balance.
I mean, trying to think of like other large scale. I mean, like, I mean, it could have been something like a battle going a different way, or
like stopping World War One kind of thing.
Right. Or just
stopping,
or just a singular like event within a global conflict.
Okay. They could have been like, let's cut out Pearl Harbor.
Right. Like, that would have also been something that would have like, you like changed things. I think choosing the Titanic is more iconic. And also, yeah, it would give them the like silly Balthazar stuff, which you couldn't really do with something like Pearl Harbor. Once, or at least like really, not tastefully.
I mean, nobody's based songs on Pearl Harbor, right? Like, surely. but using the Titanic as their pendulum swing gives them so much room for Balthazar to be just a silly, funny guy who wants to kill off the Celine Dion song and happens to save a lot of lives along the way. That makes a lot more sense for the narrative, but I don't know what else it could have been.
Yeah, so it's just kind of fun that it ended up being airing on the day on that 99th anniversary.
Some good coincidence.
Fun fact, one of my parents was really obsessed with Titanic. Like, with not the movie, just like the historical event of the Titanic. And so, like, growing up, I have seen so many Titanic documentaries. It's most of the information is not in my brain anymore, but I used to know an like, absurd amount of Titanic information.
Okay.
So I like remember the 100th anniversary because it was a big deal in my house. And I was a teenager at the time.
Because it was like 11, 12 years ago.
Yeah. Anyway, that's just kind of a fun fact. We went to like one of those big Titanic exhibits. I think it was maybe the year of 100 that was like came to the museum near us. And you got to like get a little card that said like, it was like a little ticket with like name and stuff. And you would go through the whole exhibit and you would like look at a bunch of like artifacts and like read a bunch of stuff. And then you get to the end and there was like a wall and you would like look for the name on your ticket and find out if the person that you had survived.
And then the room you were in got flooded and you had to figure out how to escape
like,
it.
Real immersive. Anyway, I have a really vivid memory of that because I went to that exhibit in like high school.
Damn.
In retrospect, was like, I mean, I thought it was really fascinating, a little macabre as a like activity.
Damn. That's pretty dope.
Yeah. It's one of the more memorable museum experiences of my life.
Yeah. I mean, at a certain point as well, trying to figure out, there's probably a good number of people that like looked up their person and found out they were either alive or dead. And it was like, all right, what else can I learn about this person?
Yeah. It's also, it definitely also got you interested in like that.
Stakes. The real human people who either died or survived.
Yeah, well, and for the ones that survived, you'd be like, oh, okay, like, what happened to this person? And like, you know, are they still alive? Or like, what are they doing now? And like, what do they do in the rest of their life, like being one of the people that survived? And it's kind of cool.
Damn, I like that.
Yeah. There's a reference to the Waltons, which I thought was very funny, which if you don't know, is like a 70s TV show about this like family in the Great Depression and World War II. Also, one of the things I was allowed to watch as a homeschooled, very sheltered child. So I'm very familiar with that show, and so making a reference to it was pretty funny.
We also had a reference to The Godfather, which is a movie series that my mother watches every year, I think. She watches through one through
that.
Three, and they say, what? No severed horse head? Haha. Because clearly you would need to have a severed horse head involved if you were involved in any sort of gang / mafia related activity. Obviously. No, you don't.
Dean makes a lot. It's notable again that, as usual, Dean is the one making most of these references. There's also like a Batman reference. There's a reference to the Riddler.
Riddle only this. Yeah, it's always good. Can't go wrong with that. I also, it felt like, I know that the subject matter I'm referring to came out well after this episode, but the fact that time freezes and then Atropos slash Fate comes in and does the thing that is required to make the person die, that felt like a big Dungeons and Daddies reference to me personally, because I was like, ooh, here we go, Mambo number 5. Spoiler alert, sorry. If you haven't seen season 2, go listen to season 2. What are you doing? Anyway.
I think you're too deep in the Dungeons and Daddies
wormhole. You know what? I'm aware of that. Ian, have you listened to Dungeons and Daddies?
I have not. I started it. Yeah, I should. I know I should. I listen to a lot of D&D podcasts, and a lot of them, there's always that getting used to it period.
Every step.
Have you listened to our Dungeons and
no.
Dungeons and Dragons?
I didn't know podcast? You were doing one until I saw the notes for this episode.
Yeah.
Well, okay. You know what?
So that's fair.
Yeah.
Before anyway.
The next time you come on, you've got to listen, and this applies to any listeners out there who haven't tried our Queering People Saving Throws Yay. Show.
Go we're having it fun.
It's a great
it's a
time.
Silly time.
It's a great
time. It's a silly time. Noah's our dungeon master and is doing a phenomenal job. It's a like super, we started it during the strike when we were not able to, when we were not releasing Supernatural episodes. We started we were like, what can we do? And we were like, we could do a D&D podcast, and it's in a Supernatural-esque world that's not, so there are like the monsters and things like that, but it's not the Supernatural world.
There's some significant differences.
Yes, there really really are. Noah's really crafted it in a fun way.
Yeah, that sounds sweet. It's
a good time.
August is giving me too much credit. Most of the credit goes to the players by shaping the world by the way that I react to them reacting to my world, and it's great. It's a fun time all around. Go check it out. On the same feed every other Friday, more or less.
More or less. No, that
I
drop.
Missed a week. Don't worry about it.
All good.
You
were DMing and editing that show, so like
Okay, sorry, as long as we're talking about references, the lady who gets her hair caught in the printer, she is trying her best to make sure that she's taking care of this office. She's a great receptionist, as long as we know her for that woman, that exact same woman. I was looking at her and I was like, I swear I know her from somewhere. And you want to know what the truth is? She doesn't even go here. She's that lady from Mean Girls.
Oh my God. Where really? God.
Uh-huh. If you look it up, she's the crying girl from Mean Girls.
Wow.
She does not even go to this show.
That's so funny.
That's a really good cat.
Yeah, good eye. I have, in all my time seeing this episode, never once picked that up.
He doesn't go here.
Oh, it killed me. And I was so happy about it.
So we now know what she did after Mean Girls.
Yeah, she moved on to a fantastic next, gig where she died 4 minutes into her, 45 seconds into her appearance.
Nope.
Yeah.
Well, victim number 2.
I don't know if we even got her name.
We definitely did. Did we?
I do not remember.
I swear
we did
she
or
has
not.
A name.
Let's see. Let's see. Let's find out.
I think it's Annie something.
Okay.
Annie Whitaker.
I'm just gonna say you are correct.
Yeah. You know what?
We're gonna say
yep. Correct.
Scroll
I can't
down
find
just
it.
A little bit to the characters. Nope.
Just have a wiki
there.
Page. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
You're so right. Let me check the IMDb page again.
Okay.
See if they name her. Anyway,
they definitely did.
Not really that important. Do get the line, accidents don't just happen accidentally. Also an iconically quoted Supernatural phrase.
The faces that they both do at that moment. Shut the fuck up. What I meant.
That phrase got quoted a lot in Supernatural fandom whenever the writers would do something particularly insane. But we were like, is it an accident or is it on purpose? People would just, that would be the quote they would put. It would be like, accidents don't just happen accidentally.
It is very allow myself to introduce myself. We are right in the, so part of the my watching Supernatural and my history and you know, you get to look forward to this in the future. I left it like midway through season 8, I want to say 8. Yes,
okay.
8.
I think we figured out that it was 8 because I talked to you about season 9 plot points and you did not remember them.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Spoiler!
is? Season 8, no real spoilers, but it's just like, it starts to hit the situation where the writers, I mean, you've already seen it this season, where the writers decide to do things because they could, rather than... They're like, what if we got this actor that people want, this like one TV character from one episode for this dumb bit? And then it happened.
And the jumping the shark sort of just keeps happening like more and more.
Which they used that title as an episode in season 4. And here we are 2 seasons later and they're jumping the jump.
The shark
of
the just
shark.
Gets bigger and bigger. It's just a bigger and bigger shark.
They just keep turning around and jumping a slightly larger shark.
Sometimes it's a significantly larger shark, and we still love it.
There are entire seasons that are all like, what if we jumped this shark? What if we actually traveled to another galaxy and jumped a shark in that galaxy?
Why? Traveled to different galaxies?
It's a metaphor.
Okay, sorry. Because Jamie and I had a prediction where they would go to space.
Again,
I
can't confirm or deny any prediction that you make on this show.
They go to space, full stop. Okay.
Ian says it. Well, there was...
I don't know. I'm not far enough in to know if they go to space or not.
There was a lot more to the prediction. Like, they went to space, they went to Jupiter, and like, they had a battle here and whatnot. It was great. It was really elaborate.
Jamie, who's our friend on Driver Picks the Podcast, we made her and Noah do an episode at the end of season 5 with their like thoughts and predictions, neither of them having seen past that.
Cool.
It was a fun time.
Yep.
They said some wild things that we are going to come back to in a few years.
Which we love.
So one thing that we definitely have to touch on in the world of shipping, Balthazar being extremely direct and describing Cass as being in love with Dean.
The most direct we've had to this point.
Yeah. He says, oh, I think you've got me confused. I'm not the one in the dirty trench coat that's in love with you. Okay.
It's a good bit of just like ribbing and a good bit of just, you know, he's making a joke, but also making a joke. Like I can imagine. I mean, I can't speak for you, August, because I was not that person who ships, you know, make the beautiful boys kiss. That was
let's hang up the call now. Let's kick Ian off. 11. I think that's enough.
That's fair. That was like almost 15. That was like 13 years ago.
13, and they're like, look at these. Look at.
I was older than 13, but like this was 13 years ago. Is what I'm saying.
But I'm still on board with the let's make the boys kiss, please.
Oh yeah, but just like, sorry, the point you were actually making.
I'm sorry.
The point you were actually making.
Oh, the point I was actually meant was just like the fandom being, because at this point they had the book. They would have. They 100% would have had the person literally writing fan fiction about them. Yes, that has happened.
Yep.
Has that? Yes.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. The girl.
Yes.
Was
Becky. We met Becky. Yes. Becky.
Having, you know, they have at this point.
They've crossed the barrier.
They've acknowledged the shipping and the fan fiction.
Yeah.
As being like this is kind of a weird thing for you to ship brothers. And then now leaning into, because yeah, this was sort of the era of TV where some shows, I'm going to reference, where Glee, legitimately just brought up the ship names that were given to them by the internet.
Yep.
Which is wild.
They're absolutely starting to have conversations back with the fandom. And a lot of shows were starting to do that. And like Supernatural was definitely starting to do that. Like their whole, the Real Ghostbusters episode with the fan convention is like directly like.
Yeah. Representing quote unquote the fandom at that point.
Yeah. So this line is like fascinating in that. And then, you know, is followed by immediately like the rest of this episode, it being like Cass being like, yeah, I'm not going to allow you to hurt them.
Yeah. I have to, between, yeah, complete pandemonium and my two favorite boys.
I will choose them.
Yep.
Which like, also speaking of like kind of in a connected way, like there's a lot of interesting meta, and I wrote down a lot of quotes about like fate in this episode about like, oh, I thought you couldn't change history. Haven't you heard? There's no more rules, darling. Just a lot of interesting meta. Fate herself talks about like God giving her a job and a script.
Which is
and
wild.
And throwing a book.
Yep. Which is wild because Cass is the one that they've referenced in the recap for this episode and in previous episodes about him burning the book and throwing the pages away for every one of the angels, which I would assume would include Fate at that point. If God gave them the same script that they gave the angels, Cass, using his free will, burns Fate's book. It burns everybody's book. It burns Balthazar's book. And nobody knows what they need to do now.
Cass kind of forces everyone into choosing freedom.
Yeah. And Atropos fucking hates that. They love the rhythm and the schedule and the stuff that they need to do. And they want to follow that to the end of the world, I guess.
It's another interesting episode in terms of that, like, meta narrative about like who's telling this story and why and who's really in control of this story. And like Cass is being really strong, which like is probably the most we've heard from Cass this whole season on like his motivation of like freedom being still his motivation,
which is wild because previously we've seen that he is fighting in the civil war in heaven, and we've seen that he still cares about the brothers even though he's sometimes a little too busy to hang out with them, and he's trying to help Balthazar get these weapons. But then once Balthazar gets the weapons, Cass doesn't quite trust him to maintain control of them, because then immediately Balthazar goes back and changes history. So it's like, okay, was that something Cass wanted, or was that something Balthazar wanted to do just because fuck it?
It's an interesting question.
Because at the end, Balthazar has the kill shot on Atropos, the Fate, and he's there, and Cass says, Balthazar, don't do it. Like, stop, one second. And Balthazar is like, ooh, awkward, whoops. Isn't that funny? So silly of me. So I want to believe that Balthazar is following all of Cass's orders at this point.
Right, but that's questionable.
It's questionable, to say the least, because as soon as Cass says, go back and fix it, he does. So was it Cass's orders to do it in the first place? That really, it challenges me personally.
These are some really good questions that
I'm just listening to this discussion being like, was it Cass's order to unsync that? I see that episode and I see this episode and I read it as, no, that was a like
creative choice.
Like, I see that as more of a like, no, Cat, like having it be a, whether it was direct orders or whether it was like a crap, we need more souls. How do we get more souls? And then Balthazar goes, we could unsync the Titanic. And then Cass is like, yes, do that. Like, I read it as that wasn't Balthazar being a silly little guy. That was Cass. What
event in human history would have given us the most souls here and now?
Right.
Yeah.
It's okay. Like not undoing a lot of other things. Like, that's a singular event. That's not like a war or something where like a battle where you're like, what's a singular event that changes? That was,
quote unquote, an accident.
Yeah.
Right. It's not. Yeah. It doesn't change motivation. Like, nobody meant to sink Titanic. That's interesting. And I think we will come back to it when we get to some future episodes.
Because, my God, I don't think we've established before this episode that the war in heaven is being fought using human souls. We've not gotten that confirmed. I was wondering if you would mention
that,
because
that is new information for you.
Wow. For your war machine quote? Oh, okay. Wait. What weapon are you using that uses souls as fodder for that cannon? Wow. Yeah. Big reveal.
Yeah, big reveal that's going to have some repercussions. We are like five episodes away from the end of the season.
We're
like,
so close.
We are steamrolling to some answers on some of the questions you've been asking all season, Noah.
Okay, good.
But we can't answer them now. And I think that's probably where we end this conversation. But
shit. Okay, wait. We can't end the episode conversation overall without talking about my hero and icon, Ellen, coming back for this episode. Because I fucking love her. And she's so great. And I hate that we don't get to see Joe. But it's whatever. I get it. Availability, no big deal. But Ellen and Bobby being a couple for this whole episode is so sweet so wholesome, and they would be such a good couple in the main show overall if it was possible. If Ellen hadn't died, I think she and Bobby would have made a phenomenal couple throughout this. Fandom feels pretty
strongly. I think that they chose this particular like person to bring back because the fandom had long kind of looked at those two characters and been like, man, it wouldn't have been great if like that's a very much a fan love pairing that I think that they pulled from to do this episode.
Proud of them for that. I love it and I support it. There was a moment in this episode when Bobby told Ellen the cost of keeping her around and was like, well, it's 50,000-ish people, or I keep you and Joe alive. And she looks at him and is like, damn, Joe would still die if we did this. And that moment alone speaks to me, because I know that she would be absolutely willing to give up her life for 50,000 people. But when her daughter is involved, she hesitates a lot more. And she's like, I mean, I still think it's the right choice, but I don't feel good saying yes, go ahead, do it. If it was just me, in a heartbeat.
Again, very reminiscent of their like death scenes as well.
Which kind of flipped,
because in the death scene that they have, Joe is the one that is like,
get out of here.
Why would you They'll also die?
I'm dead already, no big deal. And Ellen is like, I'll stay with you. Yeah. Don't worry. It's I'm very, not gonna like, let you leave without me. And then she does leave without her.
Their fates are tied together.
Yeah.
And they are tragedies.
Hurts my heart and my soul and my body and all of the above.
But it was nice to see Ellen, if only for...
It was great. I loved seeing her back and happy in this reality. It was good.
It was good. With that, we should wrap this episode.
That means it's time for our final and favorite section of the episode. Character to watch /
or character blessings.
Couldn't see that.
I would like to bless those 50,000 people who had potential lives just ruined. Because, you know, their potential lives were, you know, human lives and didn't deserve to be like someone's soul fodder for their canon. That's not great. That's not loving that.
Nope.
So I want to bless that potential of those 50,000.
Fair. Ian, what about you?
I mean, in particular, Noah, as a new watcher, we have alluded to it at this point. I want you to watch Cass and see what that that's a whole I remember a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's like keep an eye on that one. There is a true thing, but he's definitely going from, I'm going to throw a bunch of wrestling terms here now.
Okay, do it.
So babyface good guy, heel bad guy, somewhere in the middle is called a tweener.
Okay, yeah.
The Cass is going from babyface and starting to dip his toes into tweener with this episode.
Okay.
That's a good
metaphor.
Yeah.
We love to see it.
Yeah.
How about you?
I mean, I can't watch this episode and not pick Bobby/Ellen.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to pick both of them so badly, because they're two of my favorite characters and I want to see them happy in their own rights, respectively. But Bobby is dealing with currently the loss of Ellen again and Rufus. And
he
really just deserves to be happy in his own way. And I hope that Ellen is happy again back up in heaven, where she clearly ended up once again after this episode. So Bobby/Ellen.
Mm, there we go.
It was a hard episode.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Ian.
Oh my God, great. Ian, thank you so much for coming on again. It's been so long since I've heard your voice and it was great to put a face to the name.
Lovely. And hopefully by the end of this, you will have heard my voice more than seen my face after you're done editing this. But that ratio is now a little closer.
Yeah.
It's a little bit closer for sure.
We'll have you again for like a season 7, season 8 kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we'll have to have you once we get to the point where it's an episode you also haven't seen.
That would be extra fun, because then we'll both be on the same page at that point.
And I'll just be, I will be the blindest of us.
You won't see in between stuff.
Yeah, I'll just watch whatever episode you give me and just sure, why not? What's happening?
I got some ones in mind I think you'll like.
That'll be so good. I cannot wait.
Thank you so much. If you are listening, you can subscribe to this show, Saving People, Queering Things, wherever you listen to podcasts, and maybe give us a little rating or review on your platform of choice. We would absolutely be so grateful if you did that. Share the show with your friends, all that fun stuff. If you want to get involved with our show or with our show community, you can join our Discord server. You can find links to all of our social media, and you can look at the full season mixtapes. And that is all going to be at our website, queeringthingspodcast.com.
Also out now, Queering People's Saving Throws, our main crew, along with HJF Supernatural Opinions, taking a dive into a queer D&D adventure, releasing every other Friday, right here on our feed.
Incredible. Yes, check that out. Also, be sure to ride along with us next week as we welcome back Jamie and Beth from Driver Picks the Podcast, and we're going to be exploring Season 6, Episode 18, Frontierland, through the theme of vices.
Take us out, Ian.
Thank you all for coming along for the ride, and we wish you a peaceful road until we meet again.